Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beattie. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast on the continent.
Undisputed.
In the country.
Once you've said the continent, Zato Ningirgini, number one in the country, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, just winter is here, guys, isn't it? And
winter is here, my friend, and it's cold out there, bro.
It's cold out here, yeah. And it seems the North remembers, my friend.
It's cold out there, even for our political individuals like a one Didmas Mtasa. It's cold out there.
It's cold in the winter. Yeah, today we have. I think our guests are always special, but today we have another special guest. I think I'm going to have to find more adjectives.
Yeah, because special guest, yeah, as one this summer.
It's become meaningless, like doctor.
We might have a doctor next week. Please don't say that.
Unless he's a medical doctor, like Nabas.
Wow. Okay. I hope he's not listening to this episode because I know. But we'll ask him about his doctorate when he comes. Anyway, yes, we do have a guest. Today is the 19th of July, Wednesday, 19th of July. We're recording. Yeah. Welcome to our guest, Upenyuma Koni
Matenga. Yeah.
Yes. Upenyuma Koni Matenga, double barrel surname.
Yes. Because I wanted to retain my identity too.
Okay.
I'm important too.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Welcome to
our show. Thank you.
I put out a request in the group and
yeah.
She was like, when? And I was like, yeah. Tawabata.
Tawabata.
Because people, everyone tells us, gender balance on your show is not happening.
It's crap, hey? Wait, can I say that?
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Okay.
You can say what, I mean.
Oh, I can. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. People are going to
yes,
find
it's
out.
It's free to say it. Capital 263 is free to say it,
free to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
But anyway.
I don't know what the doing is, though.
Just vote. That's the doing. How about that?
Yeah, no, that's okay. Yeah, that's a good one, actually.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah, so tell us about
you.
Yeah,
tell us about yourself.
Okay. I work at Childline during the day. I'm the communications officer. We just came back from Gokwe doing humanitarian assistance for the flood victims that were affected in December up to March. Late at night, I run TEDx Harare, and I co-founded an entrepreneurship program called Level Up with a few friends. It's running now. This is our first cycle, and we're hoping to do another cycle later on this year. I also run Global Entrepreneurship Week programming in Novembers every year, and I'm a mom. That's it.
Wow. Okay. That's where do you find the time?
Hey, you tell me. I don't know.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Between my 9 to 5 and politics and beyond, that's just it. Like after that, I'm spent.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I have a great group of I have a great support system. So Level Up, for instance, is run by somebody called Mota Samuel Kajese.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's the one who's running with that. I just, you know, I'm the pretty face that you see on occasion.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you know how to teach me how to make money? Because for entrepreneurship is the I'm very interested in that.
Apopa, return on investment.
You see, the thing is actually no, Henry's on the right track because our producers have started to knock on our door and say, you guys have been running for a few months now.
Yes.
This thing has to start making money. Saka, you see, we're in a bit of a quandary. And
how to monetize.
But it's
just follow in the footsteps of the greats, like Ruveniko, for instance, who I think has figured out how to monetize her thing on Facebook. Sell advertising space. And sell paid advertising spots. I'm a huge fan of podcasts. So when you guys rolled around, I was like, yes, finally somebody was using the medium that I understand the most, which is radio.
In fact, speaking about paid advertising space, that's something that my producer has asked me to put out there to the public. It's actually a thing that that we're doing now. So if you're interested, please get in touch with us, capital263@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. We'll definitely be making a proper ad for our show that we'll be plugging in whilst you're listening. Today,
but you're doing it wrong, though.
How am I supposed to do it?
Why are you assuming that your market for advertising is the same as your market for your content? It's never the same.
You see, this is why.
You're doing
you
it
see,
wrong.
This is why
it's good to have you here.
Exactly that.
The two things are never the same.
Okay.
I can love what you do, but I'm not going to give you $60,000 for 60 seconds, right?
Fair enough.
Right. The person, you need to figure out a way to reach the market for advertising space and sell your market for content to that person.
Onai, I hope you're listening because
definitely.
These are some great tips.
Yeah.
But
and knowledge for free, man.
Knowledge for free.
But you're an enterprise. Right? I'm in the business of helping enterprises sometimes. Yeah. So figure it out. You can please don't take a PowerPoint. They don't get
I think we need to start thinking of ourselves as an enterprise. I think that's
but aren't we all small businesses?
Aren't we?
TEDx is a small product, enterprise. Yeah.
This is a product.
Yeah, it's a product. So figure it out.
That when you product Mdara.
One of the 2.2 million jobs created.
Somebody send psychology and a tweet. 2.2 and 3 jobs created.
Wow. Anyway, speaking about psychology, that's one of the talking points that we are going to get into today, this issue of the jobs. We're also going to speak about ZEC. It's put out a budget that they need
274 million.
On that, Jacob Zuma, you heard me, and the numbers are not happening today. And then also, Mai Makarao said something about women should ask their husbands for a letter so that they can register to vote.
Yeah.
To vote.
Yeah. And
she
then
she said that we
can't start running voter education for BVR now because people will forget.
Yes, she did say that. And then I still don't believe it. Justice Makarao really, like, for me, she's one of my favorites. But clearly,
human. God. Wow. Okay.
No, she's smoking that high grade Zanunya. Okay?
It must be. She's just drinking.
And then we're also going to talk about Sekuriti Dimas.
Hey, please. Sure, guys, be kind.
Yoram Makoni, isn't he from your area?
He's my uncle, you guys.
Oh, really?
Yes, legit my uncle. Yes, my legit uncle.
And you're Kwame Makoni, Dimas. No, Kwame Makoni.
Sorry, I feel bad. Sorry, Zabo.
Maybe she can explain to us how out in the cold he actually is.
It's not even the cold. All I'm saying is it's dark and hell is hot.
Wow.
It's time to come home.
So do you want to get started on the ZEC or should we?
Well, I don't know. Now we've...
Because we're already on Didymus, we might as well start with Didymus.
So early on then in the week, I think it was yesterday or the day before, there was an article in the Herald that said where Comrade George Charamba was speaking on Didymus Mutasa. And he was saying that, you know, apparently Didymus Mutasa went to the vice president's office because he wanted to seek an audience with the president. You know, it feels like one of those situations at home. You know, when you're asking your dad, you want to ask to go out, but you have to go through your mom because you can't go straight to your dad. So it feels like, you know, Didymus was like, let me find a soft target and then that person will approach the president for me. And Comrade George Charamba says, hey, look, if he wants to come back, all he has to do is come straight through and see the president. You know, they've been homies a long time and there's nothing wrong. There's no bad blood. All he has to do is come through. The president is open to seeing him. And, you know, people blew that up. They said if he's looking for an audience, it clearly means that things on the outside are tough. In fact, Comrade Charamba actually did say that, you know, that outside of ZANU-PF, it's not rosy. So we understand.
How are the rest of us making it work outside?
Exactly.
How are we figuring it out?
I can't speak for that because I've been labeled paid ZANU-PF Twitter. So clearly, I'm
looking at the wrong guy.
Pardon me?
You're not even sharing those paid Zandu Twitter checks, mate.
I know, right?
listen, I can't be buying ad space on our platform. But but yeah, on a serious note, I completely understand. I mean, yeah, how are the rest of Zimbabweans actually, you know?
How are the rest of Zimbabweans making it? What, you know, the tax paying, because there's a difference these days between the tax paying, according to those 2.2 million jobs, the taxpayers and the non-taxpayers. How are the rest of us making it work? How are we putting food on the table and paying bills? He must figure it out. He left. That's the end. That's harsh, hey?
It's also... I think for me, the problem wasn't so much in Didymus's strife, which, for all intents and purposes, with no respect afforded, is deserved, based on his history. I'm always shocked at the level of arrogance of those that are still in ZANU. It's almost a tacit acknowledgement that there's some sort of, you know, gourmandizing or eating that it occurs in ZANU when you say, yes, it's cold outside of ZANU, it's cold out there in the open, as if that once you're in ZANU, it's the automatic means to make money. And this is almost an open acknowledgement. I think for me, this is very problematic. It's always shocking that we've gotten to a point that it's so accepted that once you're in ZANU, you're going to make money, whether you deserve to make money or not, or whether you're doing anything that makes money or not. And that for me is just like, I always taken aback at that, really. Like, geez, like the level of impunity, they don't care. They can say it, because yes, no jgamuzan, we eat.
Well, and it's a chinchow.
And we just sit back and just...
Yeah, chinchow.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
So they can do what they want. But I agree with you, because it speaks a lot to the way our state is structured, in terms of being in versus being out. But I also think that the politics of patronage needs to end. And it actually has to end with that older generation, yakaenda kuhondo. Because if it doesn't end with them, then zvichango endirana kunana psychology. And then we'll have a new crop of people who want to be on the inside to make money, whether or not they deserve it, whether or not they've done anything for their constituencies, whether or not they've even developed the country. They'll just make money. So it has to stop somewhere.
For me, what's really the problematic is that this person was a minister at some point. They've been in government, benefited from the land reform program, benefited from all these, you know, things that happen in government. And yet they failed to make something of themselves to the point that when they are out, you know, they can still survive.
Mm.
It's telling of the culture of people that is at the top there, and probably why we are in this situation that we are in today. Because if a lot of them could survive on the outside, then, you know, it would make sense, or at some point they can just, you know, go and quit. For example, Nkosana Moyo, though he wasn't ZANU PF, but he went into government, he saw it wasn't working, and he left, and he could survive on the outside. That's a whole
that's
different...
That's not the story though.
Of course. But... But I'm just saying that, you know, these people have no livelihoods outside of government, outside of ZANU PF, and it's very sad, and I completely agree that it needs to end, which is why you need to have some sort of capacity for certain offices.
Yes.
Because if you don't, you're then going to perpetuate a culture of just, you know, kind of when there's a budget for ministry things, you're going straight to buying Benzes, and then when you're out and your Benz is repossessed and you don't even know kuti, you know, mota yangu ino service kwa kupi, because everything's been done for you in government. So it's very telling, and it really needs to be highlighted so that when we are looking for people to represent us, these are some of the things that you then bring to the table and start to talk about and question.
Because I was going to say, I don't hear the electorate asking anyone, even the new independent so-called ZANU PF project candidates, how are you going to stop the politics of patronage? How are you going to make sure that instead of, I don't know, maybe food assistance going to the 2.2 million people who are starving this year, you buy 300 cars? I read that headline a few weeks ago. government bought 300 cars. And I was like, but we're asking donors to feed people. How does that make sense? So, listen, it just has to stop.
Yeah, the priorities are all wrong. But, you know, not to play devil's advocate, patronage will be there, whatever happens. For me personally, as a pragmatist, all I ask for is efficiency. You know, if you're going to chow, but at least get things done. Mm. You know what I mean? Like Ivanka Trump was sitting in Donald's seat during the G20. You know, her husband is a member of the cabinet. There's no clear sign of patronage. If Bona all of a sudden was sitting at the AU, like, I would have a heart attack, honestly. Like, you know, not taking anything. In fact, actually taking everything
away
from her.
Please don't speak certain things into the universe.
you're manifesting the future.
So, like, at least though in America, the average person on the street doesn't have to worry about where Ivanka is sitting, because Zinzru Chanda.
For now, we don't know.
I mean, look, I would like to believe that the institutions are strong enough that, you know, they really can't, you know, end up in the Zimbabwe situation anytime soon. But yes, of course, I'll accept that for now. We'll see where they are in 8 years.
But that also boils down again to people power and people holding those institutions and whoever's in government accountable. Remember, after Trump was elected, there were marches against him even being elected. Where are the marches in Zimbabwe? Not even that. Where are the petitions in Zimbabwe? And fine, you can say people will be arrested, et cetera, et cetera. But there's other ways to protest. We're not exercising our rights. We're being quiet and complaining on Twitter.
I agree. I mean, you know what? It's true that there is a culture, and I always say, because me and activism, I am one of those, you know, what's the end game? I'm always about the end game. Mm. So there is that culture of apathy towards activism in this country, because people, number one, you get tear gas. There was tear gas in the streets last week. There was, you know, water cannons in the streets last week, and that was people who were taking a petition to ZEC. So this is this kind of thing you're up against. In America, it's completely different. You can go on the streets, you can, you know, basically have a party, even riot if you want, and, you know, it will be contained in a certain way. So I think there is that. But really, speaking about Didmus, just so that we don't digress too far, it really comes down to thinking about what kind of officials we want and asking them questions that bring out their nature and some of the important things that, you know, you can tell that, oh, wow, this person, Kanango Pinda, through conversation and interaction, you can tell that this person, chances are this person is going to go in and pillage and loot and, you know, and take care of themselves and their family at the expense. So it's, I get that people have, you know, their grievances against ZANU-PF, and that's fine. Of the candidates that they do support, I really want to stress that it's important to find out the kind of people and what it is that these people are going to do once they are in power. It's all great. It's all good to say that, you know, we need to get the current government out. For those who say it, that is your opinion. But you then also need to think as well about the government that you're going to put in place.
Exactly. But we're not asking, I don't think we're asking the right questions. I think the media has been hijacked by politics. So not even journalists, which are supposedly in a democratic system supposed to hold the politicians accountable and be the watchdog, quote unquote, are asking the right questions. For instance, I attended a taping Vinico's show with Maim Juru.
Yes.
Where, you know, she's saying a lot. She's using a lot of words, but she's not saying anything of substance.
Who's this?
Maim Juru.
Oh, okay.
There was no substance. Watch the interview. Was there any substance? Was there any real substance where you could walk away and be like, yeah, you know what, I feel like she stands here on this issue, she stands here on health, she stands here on education, she stands here on I don't know, the fiscus, whatever it is.
You know, me and Maim Juru are not, yeah, because I saw something on Twitter today where she was like, I'm sorry, we stole the election, we rigged the election and we were corrupt and I'm sorry.
Can we move on, though?
No. What I think they did was,
Was what? Yeah, you said?
No, and then that's when she's talking about the by-election in Chiwundura or whatever.
Yeah, you see, now this is the thing, is that if you genuinely say that you are sorry because you rigged the election and you were corrupt, then go to the police station and report that, hey guys, I'm turning myself in because inini, I helped rig an election and I was corrupt and this is how I was corrupt. Coming out and saying, I'm sorry, is not, I mean, really honestly and truly speaking, that's not an act of contrition. You're not sorry. Because if you were sorry, you would repent for your sins in the proper way.
She needs to fire her communications person. Because the narrative...
She needs to fire herself.
She just needs to leave.
No, she doesn't need to fire herself. Because listen, Mayim Juru did how many star rallies in 2013? So she's got enough brand recognition for her to be able to be a sizable contender. My problem is that the way her camp is communicating is poor. You're saying you want to be the next president, but you're apologizing for what the current government, which you are no longer a part of, is doing. So then show me that you want to be the next president. Stop apologizing. Because what you need to do then is separate yourself completely from that camp and say, and then you start to talk about the issues of the largest electorate. That's what you need to do. That's exactly what you need to do. And you say,
I see you're dishing out all the free advice today.
Because I'm tired. I need the election to be more interesting than what it currently is. I'm tired of Morgan's, it's my right for you to vote for me if you're not going to vote for ZANU-PF. I'm tired of Ngosana Moyo's, yes, I have new ideas. Show me where. Because when you were faced with a challenge, you walked away. That for me isn't ballsy enough. I'm tired.
Okay, so we've digressed a bit, but I just want to come to, when you were faced with the challenge, you walked away.
Yes.
Right? What would you have expected him to do?
I would have expected him to stick it out and to put on his boxing gloves and fight. Because this is what these people know. Fight. For sure, Wanwenda Kuhundu. And they fought, right? These are the same people who said we died for this country. And you think, Kuti, they're going to sit across from the table from you and have a pleasant discussion where people take minutes and then it's going to be enacted in a policy. Because this is not the state of our country currently, is it? There you go.
Fair enough.
I agree with that point, but I think that it's perhaps more pertinent for Mayim Juru than it is for Nkosana. Because, you know, if she had left ZANU under the auspices of she had publicly been attacking the system and publicly been attacking ZANU and saying these things while she was there and then had been subsequently kicked out, then she would have a much more respect from anyone and everyone, you know, than we do. But she was kicked out. After having kept her mouth silent and kept quiet in the face of all these accusations while she was there. So, you know, she definitely has less fight than Nkosana. You know, Nkosana did what was good for him at the time. And I don't think he was even that high ranking in the party to be able to.
He wasn't even in the party.
He wasn't in the party. But he was appointed by the president. What bigger hand do you need than that?
Okay, no, but you know, the thing is, you also see that, like you mentioned, these guys came from the war. These are Magandanga, like true.
Exactly.
And he's a corporate. Like, you know, he's a scientist first and then he went to become a corporate. He's not about that, you know.
So he's soft.
And even now, if you look at his campaign or the way he launched, it didn't have that, you know, I'm here to be your leader. Mm. You know, like alien invasion type thing, take me to your leader. If he was the guy, I'd honestly think twice right now about taking the aliens to him, because then honestly, truly speaking, we'd be, you know, that would be the end of us. But so, I don't know, we're going to have him on the show sometime again. And
Soon, sometime in a couple of weeks.
And maybe we'll invite you actually to come through as well.
To ask
him to tell him that.
But speaking about elections, we mentioned Zek. And, you know, Zek has been at the center of a lot of controversies because BVR, guys, is not coming. Let me just put it out there right now. There will be no biometric.
Are you speaking as Christopher Farai?
I'm speaking as Christopher Farai Charamba. I'm speaking in my own personal capacity. After looking at the situation at hand right now, you know, if they pull it off, then kudos to them. But as things stand, the way they're dragging their feet, I don't know. But yeah, they say they need $274 million to conduct the election.
Run the next election.
Does the fiscus have it?
Of course not.
Of course not.
But the 2.2 million we're still paying taxes.
We're still paying bonuses from last year.
True. In parts.
Yeah.
In parts. So like a dollar and the next week another dollar.
You see.
You know, this election is lost already. I don't know why we're even talking about it. I see it. That's very nihilistic, but it's true.
I refuse to accept that that attitude. I think that this election, Diedu, whatever happens. But anyway, back to this Zach Nyaye, $274 million. I just would want to put in context the British referendum, which was there, which is larger, as a larger election pretty much than their last election, only needed $185 million. US dollars, about 142,000 million pounds or something like that, to run. So somehow our election is going to cost more than a referendum of a country. With
our last election cost 132 million. That was the 2013 election.
But contrast that with Kenya, which recently announced that their election, which I think is next year as well, it's going to cost $1 billion.
Isn't Kenya this year?
But Kenya is the larger country, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, is the UK.
No, but I suppose if you
but the per capita spend.
Yeah, per capita spend.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very high.
That's what I'm... Anyway,
You know what?
The amount is staggering, but personally, I think that they're asking for this money knowing that they won't be able to get it. And then you immediately have an excuse for failure to perform certain things. So if they say, "Oh, we didn't manage to do voter education, or we didn't manage to register everyone," they immediately have a scapegoat, and they will say, "Well, we weren't given the money we asked for, the money that we had budgeted for." So I think it's Rita, despite her comments, is smart enough to realize that you need some sort of scapegoat. And for me personally, I may sound like a crazy conspiracy theorist, but I think it's an intelligent move to just put the number out there, and if they can't get it, which they won't, or won't be likely to get it, then, you know, they'll have an excuse as to why the election was run poorly.
You know what? Rather than give us a number, I'd like for them to tell us what the amount is going to be used for. So if you say
allowances. I saw in Newsday.
Oh, really?
She said we want to buy allowance. We want to pay people allowances, voter education, and voter registration.
No. But is there a breakdown of how that money is going to be
used? Why would they give you a breakdown?
You see, so this is exactly what I'm trying to see. Because if you say that of 274 million and we couldn't do voter education because we didn't get the amount, how much was that amount? Mm. If you are using 10 million on allowances where you could have cut that to 5 million and taken that 5 million to the voter education, you see, that's where, you know, it then becomes a little bit more, we get to understand a lot more. There's nothing wrong with saying 274 million if you can justify where exactly the money is going and give a breakdown of where those amounts are going to be spent. So that's, you know, that's what I'd like Zek to provide us with. I will, in my own capacity, try to hound down those details.
Why don't you guys interview her?
Justice Makarao. Yeah. She's a very good friend of mine.
Bring her on.
But she doesn't
She's
like,
media shy.
Yeah, she doesn't like to do these things because she knows.
There's holes in her story.
She knows.
I think it's unfair to keep asking her to lie. I think as a heart, she's a good person.
But you know what? To be fair, you know, let me be sympathetic to Zek in the sense that there's only so much they can do, because at the end of the day, they have to go to the government for money. They have to go to the justice ministry for certain things in the acts to be made into laws. And there's a whole bunch of stuff they have to put up with against the government. And even...
Mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, even if they are willing to do some of the things, which, you know, I can't speak for them and say they are, they are working with a government that doesn't want to, that has said we won't reform ourselves out of government. So you're already in a situation where it's a bit of a catch-22.
I want Henry to say something.
Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is an independent commission. Justice Makarau has the power to say and do as she pleases. If she doesn't think that the government is giving her enough support, she can sit down in front of the media and say this election will be a failure because the government is not giving me enough support. If she doesn't think that the electoral laws are in line with what an independent and free and fair election would be, she can say that as an independent body. She can even say, go as far as to say, we're going to look for funding elsewhere because the government has failed to give us this funding. They're an independent body. And the fact that she refuses and she constantly is falling under the Justice Ministry and under the the Home Affairs Ministry shows that she's not acting independently. And that's why the opposition has such a problem with her, because she's not acting independently. She was, these things wouldn't be an issue. So in your statement, you just said that the government has refused to reform itself out of power. She's in a position where she can't even be fired. She's one of those commissioners. To fire, you'd have to set up a tribunal to get her out of power.
She's that not a presidential appointee.
That would be catastrophic to the government.
Exactly.
It would be catastrophic to the government. So if Rita went rogue today and said, look, guys, this is how we're going to run the election. We're going to sort these things out. And in fact, ZEC also has delegated legislative responsibility so they can change the electoral how the elections run. For example, things like the proof of residence. Those things don't need to be legislated for. ZEC is the one that can determine what they want to accept as a registration, as proof of residence. It doesn't have to be legislated for, because they already have power under the Constitution to provide for their own conditions. So she's not doing her job, and I would not allow her to hide behind the government.
She can't hide behind the government. She's an independent commissioner, as you said, rightly. And it's very wrong for ZEC to then pretend, because I read also that she asked the Justice Ministry for, what was it? Permission to do something. How is it that an independent body is asking the Minister of Justice, who has a vested interest in the next election, for permission to run an election? That doesn't make sense at all.
We have some serious issues in this country, and a lot of them. I was looking something up in the Constitution with regards to the electoral thing. So now I'm a bit confused. Yeah. But I was saying that we have serious issues, and it stems from the fact that over the last 37 years or so, we've had this unholy relationship between ZANU-PF, the government, and state institutions.
Yes.
That a lot of the lines are blurred, a lot of the people are, for lack of a better term, it's very incestuous takes place within these halls of governance. And I completely agree with both your sentiments that, you know, it's an independent commission in as far as that is how it is outlawed, that is how it is laid out in the Constitution, and that is how it should operate. And I think it was mentioned on this show that, you know, if she's not up to the task, she must step down. We all know that's not going to happen.
No.
So we honestly do hope, though, that ZEC is going to make an effort to... I completely agree that they should. And at this stage, I've said BVR for me doesn't look like it's coming.
No.
It honestly doesn't look like it's coming. And this is just based on what I've seen from ZEC. But I honestly do hope that at some point someone in that building is going to say, okay, but guys, you know what? Even if we're going to have an unfair election, let's at least make it as close to fair as possible, or whatever the situation might be. That there is some sort of credibility, because at the end of the day, if there is no credibility in the election, even if people then say ZANU-PF won and we go forward the next 5 years with that ZANU-PF government, everyone else looking in is not going to want to touch us because of the fact that elections were seen to not be credible.
The 2013 election had some sort of credibility.
It didn't have
full credibility. There were questions. There were issues.
Of course, yeah.
But it had because for me, that's exactly the problem. Some sort of credibility. Our standard is low. It should be free, fair, and credible. Though that's actually the criteria. There's no gradation.
So let me just ask a question. If we get to 2018 and the situations are not fee-free and credible,
then they need to postpone the election. It's actually as simple as that. She needs to say, you know what, guys, atina mari, BVI, Satiata, we haven't even registered enough voters for us to have a credible election. So we're extending. We're going to have it in 2019 or 2023.
So we end up with
you put us in a constitutional crisis.
I'm an anarchist.
Guys. So you put us in a situation that the Congo is facing right now.
Where Kabila has extended his term.
Yes.
I'd rather have a credible election than not. Because we're still going to have the same situation prevailing with some sort of credibility where we still have a ZANU-PF government in place. So either way, we're going to have a ZANU-PF government in place. But our standard for credibility and for free and fair should not be, well, you know, it shouldn't be a gray area. It's black and white here. Because these are numbers that we're talking about. It's not about my feelings. It should be free, fair, credible. Constitutional crisis be damned. Because you know what? People are so scared of constitutional crises. People are so scared of, No, how about we go there and we see what happens?
Henry, you have something to say?
I think that if you've been paying attention to the media and you've seen the recent utterances by parents, Hiri and Constantine Gouveia Chiwenga,
Constantino,
teaching us
Constantino.
If you, the danger of a constitutional crisis is not a civilian one; it's a military one, and they want that.
Do they?
That's what they want.
Do they?
They want that
because you think they get to hide behind the civilian government and do whatever they want.
No, they exactly get to do that.
They very much are hiding behind the civilian government.
I would take Mugabe 1,000 times over Constantino. Constantino is, yeah.
but that's another debate.
But anyway, realistically speaking, I don't understand why ZANU-PF itself doesn't realize that this is whatever happens. This is Mugabe's last term. They're eating like mabruela, you know. We farm pigs in Mrewa there. And, you know, you have to be very careful with pigs because with pigs, if you give them 5 kilos of food, they'll eat 5 kilos of food and shit out four kilos. So you need to give them just 2 kilos because that's all they really need to eat. Whereas ZANU-PF is eating like a pig at a trough with unlimited food, just eating like it's going to slaughter. And that's how I genuinely feel about why they're being so reckless with this. There's no voice of reason within the party right now because it's almost like they all see the end of the gravy train, whatever happens. And, you know, if realistically, even Chinamasa knows if this election doesn't go and isn't accepted internationally, then all his efforts at the IMF, all his efforts of international re-engagement, which have been somewhat, you know, successful, are going to go to shit. So I don't know why he would allow his party to do this.
But I disagree with you that they see the end of the gravy train. The factional, quote unquote, the factional wars are a symptom of the fact that there's a plan in place for what happens after Mugabe. And it's now about who's going to be in charge after Mugabe, whether or not it's said, whether or not it's even acknowledged. That is what is happening in ZANU-PF right now.
But will the factional wars not then end up with a situation where you split the party completely? And is that party able to sustain itself beyond Mugabe in terms of what's then going to happen with whatever new contenders come up or whatever old contenders they are? Are they going to be able to get the 2 million votes that Mugabe got in 2013? Are they going to be able to control the state institutions at the level that which this Mugabe regime has been able to do so?
I think whoever takes the military will be able to do that. Because those states... I was reading Miles Tendi is publishing this book on General Mujuru.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this chapter about when these guys come back from the war. And, you know, it was really controversial back then because there were some, I want to say guerrillas, there were some soldiers who didn't show up in the camps because there were those, what are they called? Those disarmament camps where you had to surrender your weapons and so forth. And
like Zapasi.
Exactly, and come out of war mode and get back into civilian mode. There were some who didn't do that. Those were the ones who are now our war veterans today, right? They went and set up the structures because what they were doing was then setting up the structure for the first election in 1980. So that at the time they called it, what is it, education and mobilization, mm-hmm. where you teach the people the slogans, you teach them why they need mm-hmm. to vote for ZANU-PF, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Those structures still exist,
yeah,
but that's a military structure.
Yeah, and that structure was part of what then came into force in 2008 yes. after the first election exactly. before the runoff election.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So whoever takes the military, because it's a paramilitary-ish.
Yeah, but the thing is, those structures are dying.
Are they?
The people...
Because we have 16-year-old war vets. What's that about?
No, but you see, the thing is, are those people actual loyal enough to the party and individuals? So I completely understand that. But you see, with the war veterans, these guys actually went to war. They experienced the mm-hmm. harshness of war. These guys were together in Chimoyo. They were together in Gagao and mm-hmm. all these places, you know. Because you can relate to them, you can appeal to those sentiments. To say, kuti nyika yedu ya kutorwa. And once you've said that to any of them, they'll completely understand. That's never going to happen.
Like sleeper cells.
Almost. See, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now these 16-year-olds, do they have the same sentiment or the same values that these people had? Where these people literally slept in trees because they were hiding from shellings and all sorts of things. I don't think the 16-year-olds have that.
But I think
that.
You can pass it down.
They don't.
And I think you're playing politics of the stomach now. Yes. Because what the 16-year-olds know is that it's much like the current campaign for elections. They're handing out parcels of land. They're handing out food assistance for free.
Yeah,
so now it's politics of the stomach. And whoever controls the military controls the resources, essentially. So... For me, my money is on the faction that goes with the guys who are talking to Chiwenga, the guy who rolls with Chiwenga. My money is on him.
But my, I think we perhaps might have it backwards. Is which faction is the military controlling? Because I don't think that the civilian politicians, besides Mugabe and maybe his vice president Emerson, have any sway over the actual military. I don't think Kasuguere can tell the military anything. I don't think.
I think you guys assume the military has a lot more power than it has. And
I think the
military, I know for a fact, the heads of the military aspire to be leaders of a civilian government at some point. Because they must, according to our constitution, there's a general of the army, but there's a commander in chief. And so if you've been the general, but now you want to be commander-in-chief, right? So you're assuming that the military has a lot more say than it really, really does. It's the arm, it's the fist, but it's not the brain.
Yeah, but...
I think we've sort of moved into ZANU-factionalism.
Carry on.
I'm just interested to know, Kuti, you said that the factionalism is a result of there being some sort of plan or whatever afterwards. But I sort of see it personally, and I think this is an ultimate view, is that the reason that there is factionalism is that, like any other human instinct, when there's a scarcity of resources, people that would generally be cooperating otherwise begin to work against each other. And I think that is what you're seeing with factionalism, is that things are winding down, particularly with Mugabe's patronage, is that he's probably giving his kids more, his wife more power than before, and the rush for power is because the access to power is becoming more controlled and trickling down. I think that's, for me, that's why there's an existence of factionalism.
Mm.
Not because there's an abundance of it, but because there's a lack of the resource. Mm.
So we've digressed quite a bit, and I think it's only prudent that we bring it back to somewhere. Because we can
back
speak
to Game of Thrones,
you know,
me.
What? The thing is, we can speak about factionalism the whole episode. Like, and it's something that occurs so much. And there's another question I wanted to ask. It will digress us further, so I'm not going to go there. Aww. She also said, Rita Makarao, Justice Rita Makarao, also said two things. One of it was that women, to deal with proof of residence, you have to bring a proof of residence. And somebody asked, you know, what about women? And she said, they can go and get a letter from their husbands. She also said, we're not starting voter education until, because people will forget. Those are very lazy arguments, actually.
Well, what about those of us with no husbands, right? How am I supposed to register to vote if I don't have a husband?
You go to your father? I don't know. My father is late.
Now I must ask my brother? To confirm that I'm a human being, I'm a citizen of this country.
It makes absolutely no sense.
This is why I said, what kind of a woman?
Like, honestly, it makes absolutely no sense. I don't get. Aside, you know, it's not even just women. It's deeper to the fact that it goes into how patriarchal the society is. That even the thought of it. That you say you must go and ask your husband. What if you and your husband vote or belong to two different political parties? Then he's going to deny you the right to vote because, you know, he doesn't want you to vote for whatever political party. The fact that they don't see these things or where the problematic...
You're making it too deep. What if Tatuka Namba Medu and we're not talking... What if it's just actually as simple as that? One room that are smaller, start talking, and we're not talking. And you refuse to give me an affidavit.
So what happens to the small house, actually? You know,
she gets the affidavit. Dear my Ningi.
Who writes the
She's now my matengaka. And then?
Who writes the affidavit for the husband? No one, Ka.
No one. Yeah. But the assumption is the husband owns property.
Yes.
And she should have said that instead of ask your husband for it. Because that's actually the thing that insulted me the most. We're talking about property and ownership of property to prove where you live so that they can put you in a district, right?
Yeah.
So that they can say, okay, you're voting for this MP. That I understand. This whole husband story, on the other hand. So then put it in those terms. If you don't own property, if you don't get a bill in your name, then these are, because it's not just women who are affected. It's youth who don't own property.
Yes, that's true.
For instance, it's the homeless who don't own property. It's people kumarua who have a sabuku who, for whatever reason, doesn't feel like writing an affidavit that day, who are not able to prove that they are resident somewhere. So it's not, you know, the issue, I'm insulted because I'm a woman. But really, it affects the vast majority of our populace.
You know, I believe, I'm not too sure on the details, but they did say that you can get an affidavit there where you are registering on the day. Again, the problem we face with ZEC, with all our government institutions, is that they have terrible, terrible, terrible communication. They actually don't know how to communicate. And it's very sad because there's an entire ministry that is dedicated towards these issues.
No, it's not.
Well,
communication.
No, on paper.
To communicate.
On paper. On paper.
Okay. There's a ministry of communication.
Of information.
There's a ministry of information, ka? Media and
who's the president secretary?
Well, my personal guy.
Yeah.
Well, there might be a problem at the permanent secretary level because...
My personal.
Oh, wow. I'm not getting into that one because I still need a roof over my head.
But I need to ask then, why isn't it the Ministry of Information's duty, because they have an allocated budget, to do voter registration, voter education?
No, because ZEC is an idiot. No, you don't want to conflate. I would even refuse that one.
Really?
Because no, I would.
No,
because because ZEC is an independent commission, as we've mentioned. The ministry is run by a ZANU-PF government.
But under the direction of ZEC. So ZEC would then have the responsibility of approving the materials, blah, blah, blah. How we work in NGO land.
What I could say is that if there is a shortage of funds in this 274 and ZEC doesn't get it, then the Ministry of Information can allocate a part of its budget to ZEC. So send a transfer, a bank transfer, that's all we need, RTGS, from them to ZEC. Otherwise, for them to actually be involved in running the education, Let's look at...
Okay, it was a ridiculous question.
Let's look at some of the things that they have under them. They have ZBC.
So nonpartisan there.
You see, so let's... So nonpartisan. Let me not even...
I hear what you're saying. But in terms of... Because the spend, when you're doing an education campaign, the spend is in creating the materials,
yes,
which is maybe 20% of your budget. And then the vast majority of your budget is buying airtime, advertising space, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Which the Ministry of Information controls.
Yeah, which
does
is
it not?
So you're saying, no, definitely they can give them access to resources in as
there
far
you
as
go.
ZBC would be told that ZEC is, but I would prefer it if ZEC is the one that's giving programming to ZBC. Not
well,
so
then ZEC gets the 20%. So from that 274, let's assume that maybe 30 million was for voter education, right?
Yeah.
So then instead of spending 30 million, they're now spending maybe 5 to create whatever it is, the advert, the whatever. And then the Ministry of Information's resources are dedicated towards that.
No, that's fine. Mm-hmm. As long as it's in a financial capacity,
mm-hmm,
then I'm okay with it. But mm-hmm, when it comes to taking over the responsibilities of voter education, then it's already, we have a partisan government, so it won't work.
Well,
sorry,
ZEC itself is not independent, so, you know.
Can I ask,
apples,
sorry,
oranges,
I know this is going to sound like a really stupid question, but I think that for my own sake and for maybe our listeners, what exactly is voter education? Like, what are they being educated about? Like, it seems like what are they doing?
So
is my question, is because I think a lot of these terms that we talk about, voter education, maybe people wouldn't understand the practicalities of what it actually is and why it's important. Because someone will tell you, but you go to the polling station and you vote. What education do you need?
So I think there's certain things that need to be covered. Is what is a vote? How do you vote? How do you, once you've understood that a vote, your vote is your secret, how do you protect that? What are some of the things that you need to ensure that you can vote? What are the people, what are you voting for? So if it's a councillor, an MP and whatever, what are the functionaries of these people in terms of your voting for? Those are some of the basic things that I think people need to be educated on, because, you know, it's very, a lot of misinformation can be out mm-hmm. there. And if there are no, you know, universal standards or universal, there's no universal knowledge or place where you can direct someone to a universal knowledge that is not run by a political party or by a civil society organization or somebody who is has a vested agenda. Mm. If there isn't, you know, just one place where people can get clear information on what it is, then you can end up with quite a lot of problems.
But I think the aspect of voter education focuses more on the mechanics and not on the reasons why we vote, which I think is why a lot of people misunderstand even the purpose of elections. It's a little bit like a, who do you like better? It's like a popularity contest, right? Mm-hmm. Morgan or Robert, who's your favorite? But it's not explaining to you that this has a long-term impact on how you even live, on your livelihood, on your, you know, ability to access healthcare, education, basic sanitation, and so forth. And that, I think, is where we are missing in voter education and what needs to be. And I agree with you, it does need to be taken. Even from ZEC, there actually needs to be a completely separate body, maybe as part of the education system, where you teach people about what kind of state we're trying to create and what the purpose of voting is within that state. Because there's so much focus on voting, voter registration, why you should vote, your vote is your secret, assisted voting, etc. But why are we even voting?
So what needs to happen is there needs to be civic education.
Exactly.
And I think there is room
didn't
for...
Didn't that used to be a class in... Isn't that used to be a subject, didn't it?
No.
Civics. No. It was never a subject.
Not at my school.
Not at my school.
Oh, right.
Where did you go to school where they taught you civics? I want to send my son.
So
it's fine. It's going to be okay.
But, you know, actually, civic education, that's where jobs
psychology.
Can be created. And psychology, our good friend.
Psychology should also be a subject of...
You know what, he's meant to come. I honestly, you know, he's dodging me right now, but I'll hound him down and bring him on to the show. And
after that Sapir's thing, I doubt he wants to be near the media, eh?
No, he loves it, eh?
The attention.
Yeah.
But now when people are then asking him questions that he must answer.
No, he loves it because he loves it because he will come out and he'll arrogantly defend himself and make you all seem as if you are
stupid.
Yes.
I was there. I did. I felt stupid. I was like, okay.
I mean, you know,
were you one of the ones laughing?
At him? No, actually, you know what,
I'm clapping.
No, you know what, Henry? Let me tell you, I was there and I actually laughed. Because I couldn't compute the fact that somebody would actually say that. Like, it didn't make sense to sit there and say,
For those that haven't seen the video, what does he say?
So he then says, on 2.2 million jobs, right? I think I have it somewhere because I sent it to some. Yeah. So he says on 2.2 million jobs, right? Let me go through this. And I hope, I'm saying this on record, and I hope I'm saying this for the last time. We said we were going to create 2.2 million jobs. First, let's define what a job is.
Your way.
You can use the word job in this way. I gave him a job to wash my clothes. That sentence is grammatically correct. We have created millions of jobs in the informal sector. In fact, we've exceeded the 2.2 million jobs. Now we are over 3 million jobs. So he says, we did not say we are going to create 2.2 formal jobs. He just said jobs.
Is that what Zim Asset says?
No, it's not what they said. In Zim Asset, it's structured out. They've got manufacturing, mining, education.
So he's playing semantics with the audience.
Yes, no, he is. But that's the kind of person that he is. That's the kind of thing that he loves to do.
It's not him. In May this year, the vice president said the exact same thing.
He did.
He's following the factional line. I won't even say the party line. He's following the factional line. He's like, because all he's doing is echoing what his senior said, and it.
Of course.
So there's nothing new about what psychology is saying. It's just as diabolical.
The useless one or the useless one?
Emerson Dambudzomnangagwa. I don't know which one that is.
Dumb and Dumbera.
Guys, please don't say those things about our vice president.
Actually, I'm still in Zimmy. You have the luxury of being out there.
That one that goes storming police stations is the.
Yeah, no, that one.
Jabba the Hutt.
You guys are mean. It wasn't me. So, if they're looking for people after listening to this.
No, but I completely agree. It's the party line. You know, they've really. If you speak to some of them, they'll tell you we've also created seasonal jobs.
That's nonsense.
But really, it. If we're going to define what a job is, right? There's certain things that. Is this job contributing to the fiscus? Is this job on who's the? No,
does this job
no
pay
passive.
For the president's flight to Singapore?
Is it paying taxes? But it's no longer passive. Mai Bonyongwe is the chairman of Zimra. So is Mai Bonyongwe, when Zimra board sits down, is she checking to say this job? Oh, okay, yakatipa Maria, yakati so, and this one and this one. If those jobs aren't doing that, then I'm telling you, these vendors that are out on the streets. I mean, honestly, you can't say that those people are. Well, they do pay council taxes, of which council taxes then go to pay salaries of.
Well, we know what council taxes do. They don't add to the fiscus.
No, they don't
at all. It's you know, and that's a whole. Please do a show on that as well. Ask the mayor to come, and then the town clerk.
Acting boxing, town clerk.
Whatever, with boxing gloves.
Henry, you were going to say something.
I'm weak, man. I'm actually weak.
No,
you know,
but you know what? I've seen what the value of that job is, the ones they're saying that they've created. And it's the value is nonsense. It's zero because they still can't send whoever has one of those 2.2 million and three jobs, can't send their child to school, cannot feed their child, cannot access healthcare, cannot access education, cannot access basic services. So... we created, because now it's just an electioneering, right?
And the irony of it is that they don't see that what they say is true. They have created those jobs by being incompetent. by being so bad that someone with a degree or someone who has graduated is going to have to be forced to do anything that he can do to survive. They have created that job.
To wash someone's clothes.
They've created the influx in prostitution because girls tend to need to find a way to work. So they have created that. They've created Kia Kia. They've created that. They definitely have created it. They're the ones that have led to this. So they have created it. And it's not incorrect to say it, but they think instead of being ashamed, instead of not being able to sleep at night, they take pride in it.
Well, of course they do, because it keeps them entrenched. Because how else are you going to go with Masagay rice and say, I've brought you rice, vote for me? And that's your entire argument for why you should hold office.
So Marshall was there at the SAPES thing, and he says to psychology, watch out for coming back for the seat which you got for free. And, you know, this brings me to another point that just makes my blood boil, is that this boycott that the MDC put out in, you know, it's been such a colossal fuck up, for lack of a better terms, because it's ended up with people like
Mr. Lumumba. Is that you?
It's ended up with people like psychology in parliament. To be fair, honestly, if they had put anyone else, I honestly don't think that he would have gotten the chance to sit in parliament. And you know, whilst Marshall believes that they are taking back the seat, and I honestly believe that the MDC can take back their seat, there's going to be a fight there. And it's, you know, once somebody's been in that position, it's not easy for them to let go. It's different from an outsider who's never held a seat before, who's coming in. Now psychology is used to a certain lifestyle. He's used to a certain, you know...
Incumbency, yes.
And he's definitely going to put up a fight for his seat in whatever way he can. So I don't see the value in that boycott, that, you know, but that's spilt milk, I suppose.
No, but it's probably,
I don't know, I'll let Upenyu speak on it, because that's a whole other episode.
Yeah, it is.
I was.
But if she wants to say something about it, she can tell us.
Okay, it is a whole other episode, because it's symptomatic of the poor strategy and tactics employed by the opposition beginning in 2008. I don't care what y'all say. That have failed to deliver the presidency to Morgan Tsvangirai. And they will continue, because they too are arrogant. And they will continue to fail, because, again, it's a crisis of arrogance in this country. So, yeah, man, that it is what it is.
You know, the only reason Morgan Tsvangirai is not president is Morgan Tsvangirai.
Hey, guys. You know, 2008 was rough, hey?
Oh, well. Anyway,
you should have, you've already boycotted the election. There, you go to Tunga Ituone. Then you should have said, "Zanu Tunga Ituone." Let's see. Go ahead. Wait here. He had nothing to lose.
If he hadn't gone into the GNU,
I agree with you.
Yeah,
I think he should have stood firm.
Yeah.
But he punked out and he walked away, and he'll never get that moment back, as much as he tries to relive it. Because unfortunately, that was the one that God gave him. And God doesn't do backseas.
Yeah.
May I pray for forgiveness a lot? Please don't say that.
Because there are a lot of things you'd like to take back. Huh?
There's a lot of things I'd like to take back.
God does not do backseas.
Thank you so much, Upenyu, for being here. I think we've long exceeded our usual go time. But, you know, the conversation was very good. And it was a pleasure to have you here. I hope this... invokes other people in the group to come out and share their thoughts and their views.
We'll I would want anyone else. She's fine. She can just keep coming every week.
That's it.
I'm actually not joking. I'm not joking.
No more. No one after.
We've shut it out.
That was it.
We've covered all the bases. We've got a bit of diversity going on.
But you can't call me diversity, though. Diversity would be like a Caucasian... European person.
Do you know, if you listen back, I think it's been a while since we've had a woman on this show.
Shame. You're so patriarchal yourself. As you point at the system.
Let me say this. It's very difficult to find women who like to talk politics.
Fadzai is there.
Mahere. She's no, but she's now a political.
Yeah, now we want to talk
she's
about
now a politician.
Her, right?
No, 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 no. Aside from that, she's a politician, and we're definitely going
to
invite
this
her.
Off, let's have this conversation off air before you say something problematic, Chris.
No, but I'm always ready to learn, unlearning and learning new things. We are always out for that. But thank you very much, Pupenyu, for being here. Where can people find you online if they want to, you know, pick your brain or pick a fight?
Oh, please don't pick my brain. There's nothing there. But you can find me ranting on Twitter at Pupenyu Makoni.
At Pupenyu Makoni. Yeah. You can find me on all social media at Chris Charamba.
Oh, there's no H in front of Pupenyu, please. Sorry, don't do that. Yeah, I hate that.
And you can find me on all social media at Henry Beatty. My Snapchat is popping right now, guys. You should go and check it out.
Yeah, okay. I was about to say something, but let me, you know, just close off. I can, you know.
You heard what I said.
Yeah, you've been listening to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. Free to say it.
Free to do it. Bye.
And now, Capital 263.